Welcome to the Full Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording in, and it is 2:20 p.m. and that is Central Time. And today is November 15th. Well, I thought we'd kick off with Hong Kong. The Hang Seng was up 4% today, so this rebound that's been underway since the beginning of the month and following the Party Congress in China remains intact. So definitely unwinding the short-term oversold condition and looks quite likely to come back up and test that 20,000 level, which was the lower side of the range that proceeded from 2012 onwards. So obviously very deep short-term oversold condition within a range that has been going on now for 14 years. So certainly lots of room for a rebound. And the H share index has also extended its rebound and pushed now back above the 6,000 level. So, at least pushing back up through the low from earlier this year. And certainly, there is potential at least that we can get back up towards the, 200-day moving average. And the big, I think, speculation is that having achieved his goal of becoming leader for life, Xi Jinping now wants to ensure that the economy thrives and that he's got something to show for it. So some of the restrictions are being removed, and the property sector is getting some assistance. So the Hong Kong Properties Index was in positive territory today, having gapped higher yesterday. What I find especially interesting right now is that a lot of speculative activity is very concentrated within the primary indices and the property sector. Whereas the ChiNext index, which is representative of the technology sector, it had a good-sized upward dynamic 3 weeks ago, but it really hasn't gone anywhere for the last few weeks. So I think that's rather interesting because the big question, of course, is going to be where will the focus of attention be in the next, or I guess now following the Party Congress? Who knows whether there's going to be another Party Congress, and what will be the focus of the administration going forward? Well, rescuing the property sector, or at least arresting the decline in the property sector, would appear to be the priority at present. Pioneering the technology sector seems to be lower down on the estimation of priorities. So then let's just look at some of these technology companies. Alibaba is rallying and has been really quite depressed back in the region of the lows from 2015. So certainly there's potential here for an unwinding of the short-term oversold condition, but it really does need to push back above the 200-day moving average to begin to suggest that we have a low of more than short-term significance. Then let's think about the benighted for-profit tutoring sector. Well, it's at least steadying in the region of the 200-day moving average. Now, I think that perhaps this is a better example because it's already been building a base for a year, whereas we've had this exceptionally deep oversold condition for a lot of Chinese indices. So they have yet to break the downtrends, but they've got certainly got potential to unwind the short-term oversold conditions. But then from a trader's perspective, there's clearly better potential to bet on the potential for a rebound in China than to wonder about the potential for an additional rebound on Wall Street. So when we think about the S&P 500, well, it's right now in the region of the 200-day moving average already. So hasn't got quite the same at overextension still to unwind, but it was at least in positive territory in here today. The Dow Jones Industrials Average has been quite volatile today, both up and down, but is closing out the day higher by about 100 points. But we're right in the region of the peak from back in August, and of course, there's the big question: is it going to hold this move above the 200-day moving average? And certainly we've had a return of more interest in cyclical shares and more and still the defensive sector has been a clear outperformer for most of this year, really. And the Dividend Aristocrats Index is back above its 200-day moving average as well and has rebounded quite emphatically, but has not yet broken the sequence of lower rally highs. It's all really going to come down to the outlook for the dollar. So the dollar index was in negative territory today, and it's in the region of the 200-day moving average. So it's not right on the lows of the day. Pound got up to the 120 area and didn't much like it up there. So this is the first area of potential resistance. Did think that there was the potential that the pound could get back up to 120, but that it's going to be a bit of a tall order for it to go much higher than that. A lot is going to depend on the fiscal consolidation that the government announces this week. There are strikes going on left and right, and there's the potential for additional industrial action because people are worried about inflation. The nettle that needs to be grasped is the acute need to control spending, and that's most particularly true for the NHS, where they employ 1.7 million people, and that's a figure from 2015. And that's about 5% of the workforce. So we're talking about a huge percentage of people that work for the health service. And it's a rising cost base with people working there demanding more money and then more spending required to deal with an aging population. Gilt yield continues to contract. So this does look like a peak of medium-term significance, and inflationary pressures are likely to moderate from here. And certainly the action by the central bank to quiet down the pension sector has worked. So bond yields continue to unwind this very wide overextension relative to the trend mean. Now let's think about the 10-year yield in the USA. It's still contracting, although certainly not in the same kind of dynamic fashion that the gilt has. But I remain very much of the view that with quantitative tightening underway and the pace of that tightening accelerating, and not least because the turnaround in TIPS yields is now detracting from the size of the balance sheet rather than contributing to its inflation. So that would suggest that the pace of quantitative tightening is going to accelerate. Well, that's going to contribute to deflationary forces. I did mention yesterday that it seems like oil is going up one day and down the next. So it was in positive territory in here today. At one point it was up nearly $3 and then gave up a good part of that, but still holding the $90 area. And I suspect when this period of inert trading is over, we're going to get a really dynamic move. And then that will be a breakout that is sustained. So at the moment, we're testing the lower side of that range. But when we think about the challenges where deflationary forces are more likely to be a result of earnings rolling over, and therefore that would put upward pressure on valuations, and then the dollar coming back down and yields coming back down, and the high yield spread starting to roll over. I think this is very clearly a different kind of situation than we've had in the past. Historically, when there's an issue with high yield, it's usually that the yield on the junk part of the sector goes up, and gilt, and then the gilt yield or the treasury yield will compress, and that exaggerates the spike in the yield. Whereas this year, We had yields go up on the government bonds, but then go up even faster on the junk part of the market. So that in absolute terms, junk bond yields were in double digits, and the government bond yield was a lot closer to 4 and 5%. Whereas now, what we're starting to see is that both are starting to come back down again. The next time we are, when we get closer to a recession, or when a recession is eventually confirmed, then the default rate will rise. And then we should see high yield spreads rising in the normal fashion, that you'd get a compression in the treasury yield, but then the high yield sector would underperform and lead to that spike in yields. We're just not there yet, and I think we're going to see a normalization of the market before we see something like that occurring. And valuations are lower in Asia, and they didn't go through the same quantity of spending that much of the developed world did for the pandemic. So I thought it was interesting that the Singapore financials are breaking out. So they've found support in the region of the 1,000-day moving average. I don't think there's any argument that this has been really a very choppy uptrend for most of the last decade, but it is now finding support in the region of the peak from back in 2007 and improving. Singapore is the buy side capital of Asia, and certainly much more interested in the family offices business, in asset management and wealth management, certainly more so than Hong Kong. And it's certainly thriving in this environment where wealthier individuals have a clear interest in moving money away from the grasping hands of governments. And I did see a really interesting chart yesterday, which was clearly looking at the tax collection that's been going on in the EU. And I'm really rather amazed that by the time we got to 2021, in the euro area, tax collection was at 42%, up from around 30% in 2010. So there's been a lot of fiscal take, and that fiscal take is only going to increase as we move out of the pandemic, and the fiscal consolidation necessity starts to take hold in an increasing number of governments. So it is likely that we are going to have a recession at some point in the next 12 months. The yield curve spreads remain inverted. Now, usually, the way these things work is as long as the yield curve spread is continuing to trend lower, then asset prices do fine. So that's pretty much what we're seeing right now. Asset prices are still holding on reasonably well. If we go back and just think about the trend on the S&P 500, well, it is bouncing from the 1,000-day moving average, and it's back in the region of the 200-day moving average. So this is the kind of environment where people aren't going to be that worried, and they'll think that we're down 27%. So there's obviously potential here for a reversionary rally, and potentially even more than that, because the valuation has improved. Prices have come down quite a bit already, and interest rates are starting to roll over. So that's beneficial for the most levered portion of the market, and particularly the levered portion of the market has really fallen a lot. So there's certainly potential here that the ARK Innovation ETF, for example, could rebound another 20%. And by then it would only be back in the region of the peak from the middle of this year and the region of the 200-day moving average. I think, though, that it's more likely we're going to move into type 3 bottoming characteristics for a lot of these shares, that we're not going to see bond yields, or excuse me, we are going to see bond yields contract. We're not going to see earnings improve to the same extent that they did during the pandemic. And instead, the available liquidity for these kinds of instruments isn't going to be as abundant as it was in the past. So we certainly have scope for a reversionary rally in the near term, potentially through to the end of this year. And not least because we're now the 15th of November. There's only 6 weeks left in the year. So if investors who have had a disastrous first 11 and a half months of the year have got any chance of rescuing their performance, it's got to happen in the next 6 weeks. So that's a clear incentive to get long and to start thinking seriously about increasing position sizes, because there is the potential for reversionary rallies. And that's also one of the reasons why a lot of traders are moving into the Hong Kong market. It does then, of course, beg the question, what do people do with instruments like Bitcoin, where the price was in positive territory today, but certainly not up in a dynamic manner? I think a lot of people are gun shy, and they want to see evidence that someone else is buying it before they step back into this market. Whereas gold is continuing to thrive in an environment where bond yields are compressing. So gold was up an additional $7 in here today. Now it's testing the region of the 200-day moving average, and we have a short-term overbought condition. So I don't think it would be surprising to see at least some consolidation in the current area. But as long as it is holding the move above $1,600, then I think we can conclude that a low of more than short-term significance has been found. Silver prices are characteristically volatile and are showing the first evidence of pausing in the region of the 200-day moving average. So that supports the view that we're due a little consolidation following what has been a really impressive rebound over the course of the last couple of weeks. Then the gold shares are continuing to hold the rebound and have been under a great deal of duress over the last year because oil prices have been high and the commodity price has been static. But if oil prices break down, then that is certainly positive for gold miners and miners of all varieties, provided other commodities continue to be supported. But the challenge, of course, is that if oil breaks down, it'll be in response to lower economic growth, and copper, having unwound the overextension relative to the trend mean, is now also pausing. And this also does raise a question about the ability, or at least the extent to which the measures that China has announced already will contribute to renewed growth. Because people say that copper is Dr. Copper for the global economy, but it's more like it's Dr. Copper for the Chinese economy, because China is the majority processor and consumer of the metal. So it will be very interesting to see whether the 350 area continues to offer support for copper over the next few weeks. And I think with that, I will leave you for today, and I wish all the best to all of you.